Hi, I'm Kat.
And I'm Emma.
If you love the Dead Parent Club podcast, you can help support its future using the Acast supporter feature.
Now, it's up to you how much you give, and there is no regular commitment. So if you can and you want to, please do hit the link in the show description to support now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of the Dead Parent Club podcast. Now, I am so looking forward to all of you hearing this. This week, we have an incredible guest. You might know her from Love Island or The Full Monty. She is just an incredible human being, so I am super excited to introduce Shauna Phillips.
Now, Shauna was super generous with her time, and there is pretty much nothing that we didn't cover in this episode. So, strap yourselves in and welcome along to the Dead Parent Club podcast.
So first of all, Shauna, thank you so much for coming on to the Prank Club podcast. I am thrilled.
Shauna and Biggie and Bunny as well, because if you hear the occasional snort, just to give you a heads up, that's not me and Kat.
Or Shauna.
It's Shauna's beautiful dogs, Bunny and Biggie. They are so cute. And we love the snort. But if you do hear it, it's not us, just as a heads up there. But yeah, Shauna, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
Let's start way, way, way back to little Shauna. What was your world like, and what was it like with your dads?
I was the biggest tomboy you would ever meet. But I think that's testament to how close me and my dad were. My mum didn't have my brother until I was seven, so I was a little bit like the designated son. And yeah, and it really did rub off. So me and my dad were just like big Star Wars fans, big football fans. And that was kind of our thing. So that was me up until I was about 14. I went to an all-girls school, so I think it all went downhill pretty quickly from there. I was the biggest football fan. I just wanted to kind of spend time with my dad, really.
What was your dad's name, Shauna?
Eddie.
And was he kind of your idol? Do you remember significant memories of him where you go, oh, that was a good day when you were little?
Yes. Arsenal had just won the double and we went to the parade at, it was at Highbury at this point. And I remember my dad, oh, this makes me sad. We bought, the horns, like the...
Yeah.
And my dad's one didn't work. And it was just like, and honestly, I was like, and I must have only been like maybe 8 or 9. I remember I was only allowed to stay up late when Arsenal was playing. This was like way back when we used to be good and actually in the Champions League. a very long time ago, way back when, yeah. So to be fair, it does revolve quite a bit around football. And then around the new Star Wars trilogy coming up. But yeah, I would say Arsenal doing the double. I mean, to my dad, that was probably a bigger day than my actual birth.
Best day of his life.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. But to me, yeah, it was just spending time with my dad.
Yeah, I love that. Your dad passed away when you were 23?
I think I was 23.
So
yeah.
Let us know then. Tell us the kind of story then from your dad's diagnosis to that kind of journey to him obviously passing away.
Yeah. So my dad was ill for, I think it was about 18 months. He got diagnosed he became ill in the August. So although he didn't get diagnosed until like November, we knew. We were just waiting for the confirmation. But I mean, we knew. And it was a really weird time because my friend had passed away. He had been killed. He had been punched in the back of the neck, and it burst a vein that was going to his brain, and he passed away. That was in the June. So that was my first experience with death that hadn't been like an elderly, like, family member. It's always sad, but you kind of expect it. So when my friend died and he was 20, that was just, and completely out of the blue, that was just traumatizing. But then I literally only had a month after that, and then my dad become ill, that then everything else in the world just seemed so minor because it just all revolved around my dad. And it was weird because we were selling my granddad's house in Ireland. My dad's family are Irish. So we were selling my granddad's house in Ireland. He'd passed away a few months prior. And it was just, it was really stressful. I remember my dad being so stressed out about it. So stressed out to the point that my dad used to be a black cab driver. He was driving around and looked in his mirror, and he had, his eyes had gone yellow.
Aww.
And we put it down to the stress because he wasn't sleeping. He wasn't eating. But then he rang my mum and he said, I've just noticed my eyes, so I'm just going to drive to A&E and just see what the situation is. But he must have known something was up. I don't know whether that was the first sign or whether it was just the first sign that he couldn't ignore. But yeah, he drove straight to A&E, and I remember they was doing all kinds of tests on him. He ended up being admitted to hospital and was in there for about a week.
Wow.
And they didn't know what was wrong with him. They was treating him for kind of a bit of everything, but they just couldn't tell us what was wrong. And do you know what? It's just so weird because I feel like from the moment my mum said, oh, daddy's going to A&E, I just had a feeling. And you don't ever utter the words, the big C, you don't ever say that out loud because you don't, it's almost though you don't want to talk it into existence. But I just, every time they was like, oh, we're gonna send him for a CT scan because we think he might have kidney stones and all of that, I would hope with every fibre that they'd be like, yeah, it's kidney stones. But I just knew it weren't. I just knew. And my mum and dad were supposed to be going on holiday to Lanzarote and was waiting for results to come back for him to be able to be released from hospital. And he said to my mum said, I'm not going on holiday. And my dad said, you have to go because if you don't go, I can't come out in a week's time. Aww. So you need to go. And my mum's like, I can't. And he was like, that's fine. Sean is here. And I was thinking, what, hun? my dad said to my mum, you've got to go on holiday. If you don't go, I won't be able to come out in a week's time. Don't be rude, blah, blah, blah. My mum went. And I remember those, because my dad was still in hospital. And I remember those few days, I was actually delirious. I was sick with worry. I was having to go home to quickly walk the dog to then go straight back to hospital. And I remember there was this time when I was driving home. I hadn't slept for about 3 days. And I almost kind of just zoned out a bit. And when I got back, I was thinking that was so dangerous. But that was just how delirious I was.
That's so sad for like a 20-year-old. Like, as you got older, I think we're similar ages. And I was 19 when my mum got diagnosed terminal. And like, you look back at that younger self of who you are and you're like, oh my God, my heart breaks.
It makes you, though. It because you have to grow up in a split second.
It does make you.
My dad had gone for like an MRI scan. I remember he rang me with a voicemail, and I was at work. He rang me and said, hi, Shauna, just to let you know, the MRI scan's come back. There's no tumours or anything like that. So that's great news. But the consultant's going to come around tomorrow and give me more of an update. And I was, honestly, it was at that point, and I was like, I was wrong. I was wrong this whole time. Thank you, God. I think I prayed and I was like, thank you so much. And then went to pick my dad up from the hospital the next day. The consultant actually popped his head in the room and said, sorry, I'm running late. I will be in, but just to let you know, I was wrong yesterday. There is a tumour, but we don't know if it's malignant or anything yet. So I'll come in a bit. And then just kind of went back out and left me and my dad to it. And I was there. I remember instantly my lips started tingling. I was like, great, having a panic attack. And my dad's first words to me was, don't you dare tell your mum. And I was like, I hadn't even thought about that side of it yet. And instantly he said, do not tell your mum. Whatever you do, you have to swear on my life, you're not going to tell your mum. And because he wanted to tell her, he wanted obviously to have that conversation. It wasn't something that she should have been told over the phone anyway. But in that moment, every phone call I had with my mum after that, I just had to be like, yeah, everything's fine. And I was just, all you want is your mum to be like, no, everything's okay. But in one sense, I wanted to save her from it, because the longer she didn't know, the less she had to deal with it.
Yeah.
But, and I knew she would have killed my dad if she knew that he made me swear. So I really wanted to grass him up, but I didn't tell her. And we ended up going to Lanzarote. They let my dad out because obviously there was nothing they could do right away. It kind of has to take its toll. And I just remember that holiday. Oh my God. It was just, do you know what? From that moment, every picture of me, maybe I can tell more, but I'm just, the smile was just like, like, there was just a whole world of things going on in my head.
So did your mum know when you went out to Lanzarote then? Did your dad have that conversation, or did you do the whole holiday without your mum knowing?
I don't know. I actually don't know. I remember then coming home, and then again, you kind of have these conversations with doctors and whatnot, and it's still not confirmed, but that they're treating it as if it is confirmed. And to this day, I actually don't know when my mum found out. I don't know when my mum, because at that point it's like all systems go, we're going to fight this, we're going to do every single thing, what's the plan of action? You're almost at war, and you don't let up from that level of attack at any point. I remember even when my dad was in the hospice, so we knew it was kind of within the next few hours he was going to pass, and they told us within the next 24 hours he won't be here, and it was like He ended up living for like another 5 days.
Wow.
And me and my mum would say to each other, on like day two and day three, we'd be like, maybe we can turn this around. But you have to be like, no, this is it. Because you're just so used to having hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you almost feel like you're doing him a disservice from not having it anymore.
But people also say, you know, oh, you've had a terminal diagnosis, so you can prepare, you can expect it. You don't freaking prepare for it at all. You do not accept that is going to happen, like, at all.
Not in a million years. Like, it's almost like preparing to fail. Like, and don't get me wrong, like, my dad having chemo was worse than cancer because it robs them of any quality of life. But you are so torn, and I probably still deal with that a little bit now, because if you told me that I could give my dad ashes chemo and it could potentially give him another 10 minutes, selfishly I would do it, even though I know that it would be a horrible 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But what do you choose? And like, I've, about 6 months after my dad passed away, I found a lump in my boob, which ended up being nothing, thank God. But I remember thinking, I don't want treatment. I've seen what treatment is, and I don't want that. But then how can I deny my mum the right for me to try and fight? It's just, it's like choosing what arm to amputate. It's just horrendous. It's horrendous.
It is. It is really hard. When my mum was diagnosed, she refused treatment after she got her terminal diagnosis. And like, sometimes I'm like, if she'd had it, we might have had a bit longer with her. But at the same time, she had like a year and a half of like a good quality of life. So you kind of like, oh, you know, like, how there is no good choice, really, is there?
There isn't. And before my dad got ill, whenever I would ever hear that someone has been diagnosed with cancer but not having any treatment, I used to be like, how selfish is that? But now I completely understand. I still think, would 6 months of my dad being my dad have been better than 18 months of, like, I just can't even explain the trauma that I have from seeing my dad, who was 16 stone, big, strong man, would take on the world, going down to what he went down. Like, it's just horrendous. It's absolutely horrendous. I can't believe there's children out there that have that.
Oh, yeah, I know, horrific.
It keeps you up at night, the thought of it keeps you up at night. But then what other options do you have?
That's the thing, isn't it? And ultimately, you go into, like you said, it's survival mode, and you're just like, we'll do anything desperately just to keep this person alive. And you're not thinking about quality of life at the time. You just desperately want them here. And that's not actually selfish, because it's born out of love. And what was life like for you, Shauna, in the immediate aftermath of your dad's passing?
even before that, actually.
Yeah.
When he was getting treatment, because you're like 20. What were you doing at that time when you were 20?
I was, to begin with, I was working in River Island. I graduated from university in like the October, and my dad had been ill from the August and began treatment in the November.
Okay.
So it was the build up to the treatment. Mm. And yeah, it was absolutely horrendous. Like, I used to thank God for River Island, because I used to literally go into work and just cry my whole time that I was in there. And my managers were so good, but not just the emotional impact. People don't understand the financial impact. My dad was self-employed. We went from living an amazing life to then all of a sudden my dad couldn't work because my dad's treatment, it was stage 4. Pancreatic cancer is like one of the worst. I think it's got like a 3% survival rate. It's just, you don't survive if you get it. And he couldn't work, but he wanted to, because if he didn't, we was going to be homeless. And to think that someone who's fighting for their life has to worry about that, it's like, what? My dad's paid taxes since he was 18. How on earth is that the two options that we have? Don't get me wrong, my mum had a great job, but to sustain a big household with me and my brother and my dad and a dog, and then all other bills and everything else combined, the stress was just incredible. It was just, it was very hard on my dad, because my dad was so used to being a provider and being able to have money whenever he needed it, to then not having it, it's so dehumanizing. But you're going into survival mode. You just don't even. I probably still haven't really dealt with it. I truly don't think I have.
I honestly don't know if you ever actually do. Like, whether you, when it's that traumatic, like, you do just kind of, you can't bring yourself to sit and actually think about it for that long. It's, talking about it is one thing, but actually sitting and processing, I think it's traumatic.
My dad lost his mum when he was like 23. So, but he never spoke about it. He really, really struggled with it. And even my aunt, my dad's sister, who is a couple of years older than him, she was still having kind of therapy sessions over that loss. My nan died like quite suddenly. So it was a lot different in terms of the death and the situation. Even though when people say, like, did you have conversations with your dad about things and whatnot? In a roundabout way, we did. But I never accepted that I was preparing for my dad to die. Yeah. Yeah. So you don't have those conversations, because you think, no, there is no rush. Because I didn't want my dad to think that I was, like, getting ready to say goodbye to him. Like, not in a million years.
It's too depressing, isn't it? Like...
Oh, completely. Me and my mum say all the time, we just never let ourselves go there. And I think that's almost what keeps you going. We missed it. When my dad died, we had to then adjust to not having weekly cancer clinics, not saying, oh, what's he eating today? Or in the night, I all of a sudden started sleeping lightly, because if I heard my dad yawn, I'd sit up and go, is everything okay? Does my mum need me to go in there and do anything? To then adjusting to not hearing that anymore, it's like your body kind of misses it a little bit.
How was it for you, like, with your friends and stuff at that time? Because your life is so completely different to everybody else's life around you.
Yeah. I was so jealous. Because I just think, I wish I had boy problems. Yeah. And I wish my hair weren't curling right. Yeah. And it's almost overwhelming to think back to the day before my dad became ill. Because I just can't even fathom what my problems were. Like, what did I think on that day that my problem was? Like, it's crazy. But I'm very, very lucky that when I don't know if that's the word. My best friend, Connor, his girlfriend, they'd recently started going out, and her mum had also had cancer at the time. And I remember she passed away, and I didn't even want to tell my dad, because I was just thinking, you just don't want to tell them that news. But having my friend there, like, we'd only known each other for a few months. And when my dad went into the hospice, she said to me, do you want me to come? And I thought, yeah, please. Like, and even thinking about it now, that must have been just so big for her to even step foot into a place like that. I mean, I had my COVID jab in the same hospital where my dad had his cancer clinic. And it's the first time I've been back there since. And I walked past and had a panic attack.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
So I can't even imagine what it must have been like for her to step foot in a place like that 6 months after her mum died. But I've been so lucky to have that person there to talk about, not even have to talk, just know, or like say things, or sometimes like I go to their house and like me and her will just sit there and cry. Or, and like we have like a dark sense of humour that everyone else that hears, they're like, you're really messed
That's fucked.
You're in good company here, really, Shauna. In very good company.
Oh my God. Yeah. Do you know what? I was around hers once and there was a phone ring. Your phone's ringing and it said, Dad, oh wait, that's not yours. And I was like,
thanks.
Wow. And she's like, oh wait, I didn't mean it like that. And I was like, yes, you did. You really did mean it like that. But if anyone else said that to me.
Yeah.
I have this like sixth sense, right, for people that I've got a dead parent. I don't know what it is, right? But I started a new job a few months ago and there was this girl that's in my team and I was like, this girl, she is a great girl. Like, really, I can just tell. And within about a week, I'd obviously like oversharing about like my mum and my life and stuff. And then she ended up telling me that her dad was dead. And I was like, I knew it. Like, I just knew it. And also, when I first saw you on Love Island, obviously, years ago, and I was like, this girl, this is a great girl,
top girl.
And then obviously didn't know for months.
Yeah.
But I was like, no wonder. Like,
do you know what?
They're always the best people.
Yeah, I was going to touch on that actually, because what struck me watching you on Love Island was you had definitely a wisdom beyond your years.
Oh my God, yeah.
And a loyalty. Really? And you were a girl's girl. You could really tell that there was a real, well, it was obvious to everyone that you were a girl's girl, but in the same vein as you, Kat, there was something, you were older in your head, far older, you were well beyond your years, and that, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
Because to go through that experience, you had to grow up so quickly. You were dealing with things that your friends were, you know, like you say, you wish, and we've been there, you wish you have, when you're crying in a pub toilet and people think it's over a lad, you wish it was fucking over a lad, don't you?
What's he done, babe? Not like my fucking parents dead.
Yeah.
He's left me. It's you're 100% true. Yeah. Oh my God, completely. But it's the same, like, one of my managers at my management company, her dad passed away as well. And when she told me, I was like, oh my God, Sam! Like, it's almost like,
yay!
And if anyone else heard you bonding over that, they're like, wow.
Yeah.
But do you know what? Although people might not understand having like, not a sense of humour, like my dad was so funny, that's definitely where I get my humour from. But if I can't laugh about, not it, but if I can't make lighthearted jokes about things like that, then I would just succumb to the grief. Yeah. Like, you do just succumb to it. And, like, you do, so when people, like, have these first world problems, even when I have them, like, when I'm on the treadmill and I'm, like, 2 minutes deep and I'm, like, I'm going to die, I'm like, your dad went through worse than this. You've got to
grab it yourself.
Yeah, so I apply it to absolutely everything in my life, literally, because it does make you just stiff up that top of lip and just go, do you know what? Get on with it. It's true when you say like your friends don't know what they're going through. Like, I had friends whose parents didn't know what I was going through. They couldn't even fathom it.
And you find that people are scared almost. I found some of my friends' parents didn't know what completely. To say to me. And I was like, this is not helpful that you don't know.
Don't
what
acknowledge
to say.
The fact that the worst possible thing has just happened in my life.
Yeah.
No, you're so true. And I actually think like one negative about it is that I got into so while my dad was dying, I don't even like saying that word, but when he was ill, I was in a relationship that was so bad that needed to end. Mm. But I almost felt like if I'm dealing with this like drama, I don't need to deal with this drama.
Yeah.
And then like that did end. And then literally like 3 weeks before my dad passed, I got into like the worst relationship, and then I just kept it for like 2 years.
Wow.
And it was so bad, but I felt like it was almost delaying,
yeah,
like what I knew I had to deal with. Like, so bad. So I kind of felt like I clung onto this relationship because his dad had died as well.
Okay.
So I was almost like, he will know. He will so know. Literally, like, 3 days after my dad died, I must have been crying in my sleep. And he woke me up and said that if I don't stop crying, he's going to get a cab home.
Oh, my
So God. I went and sat in the front room and cried. Oh.
The thing is, though, is that ending a relationship is, like, another form of grief, isn't it? So it is, like, your mind trying to protect yourself from having to deal with even more of it. So you're just like, it's fine. Just dealing with the shitness is better than me grieving
it. And I think another thing is completely, when you lose a parent, you're at a very young age particularly, your identity, your self-esteem, everything just plummets low that actually I've been guilty of it. I've accepted, not even second rate, it wasn't even love. I've accepted horrific treatment because I was like, you will cling on to what you think is love. Yeah. And it's, that's not spoken about enough. It's the damaging effects of that.
I essentially was in a relationship where the boy was going, I don't want to be with you. And I was like, no, but you might. Let's just try.
You'll cling on to that tiny bit of affection as well that kind of makes you feel like worthwhile. Yeah. Like those tiny bits of affection, you're like, you're like obsessed with it. And then that's what keeps you going every time.
And I think it's also because, like, you are only, like, and I understand now that not everyone has the same relationship with their dad or their parents that I was so bloody lucky to have. So I get that now. So you are only, if you're lucky, you're only blessed with, like, two absolute ride or dies that, you know, if you need 10 grand tonight or you need to bury a body, they've got your back. So to then know that one of those people aren't there anymore, you just feel open. You just feel like you're now what? And not only that, like, my relationship with my mum changed for like a year because I almost kept her at a distance because I almost felt like, well, I don't want to get too close to you in case you decide to dip out on me. Even though, I mean, you're already close anyway, that's your mum. I just had so much emotion. I didn't know what to do with it. Like, I was already blaming my mum for potentially at some point in her life getting a new partner, which hasn't happened, which I kind of hope doesn't ever happen. But I was already, like, putting so much anger on her at that because of that I didn't even want to look at her.
I was just saying, it is so hard navigating that relationship with the parent that's left behind. Like, it is one of the hardest things you have to do because, like, their emotions are completely different to yours, and your way of handling it will be different to them, and they're probably angry about it. You're angry about it, and I think, I was the same. Like, with my dad, I was like, me and my dad didn't really talk much before my mum died, even though I lived with him. But I was suddenly just like, oh God, who is this man, and how do I talk to him?
How are you?
So stressful.
Did you talk to anyone professionally?
No, I didn't, because I just thought, unless you can teleport my dad back here, then there is nothing that you can say to me that's going to make me walk out of the room and be like, oh, that was nothing. Oh my God, what was that about? So I didn't, and it's not that I'm against it. My aunt, my dad's sister, who is so, like, dramatic over everything, but she said, great, I'm still in therapy over my mum and now I need to go because of my brother. So she does. And it is completely, I may have, if I didn't have Emma, who I could vent to at any point, I might have.
Yeah.
But for me, I just thought, and I never used to deny myself my feelings. Mm. So, like, every now and then I'd, like, go home, and if I'd cry, I would cry solidly for like 5 minutes. And then I would almost, like, hear my dad go, right, you've had your moment. Now
pull yourself off.
Together.
Yeah.
Yep. And then I'd pull myself together and I'd be like, right, like, check in, check out. That was my grief for the day.
I do think that's a good way of doing it, to be honest. I think I do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You just allot yourself some time.
I have it bubbling under the surface for, like, long periods of time. And then I'll have, like, a big breakdown.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, okay, fine, carry on.
Yeah.
Mine are the worst. So I don't really drink. I've just, my mum and dad weren't big drinkers. I'm not a big drinker. But if I ever do get drunk, I would literally sit next to like someone in the kebab shop, like, yeah. Can I talk to you about my dad?
Yeah. No. That's literally my life. Yeah. Funny story, just interim story, right? I'm on Hinge at the moment, right? This guy had on his profile, it was like, his answer to a question was something like, I can guarantee your mum will love me. And I could not help myself but reply to it and be like,
mum's dad.
You're in for some breath of time, huh?
I dare you.
How did he challenge?
Well, he actually didn't reply. Oh. He didn't match me. It's fine.
I mean, he's not for you then.
You wouldn't though, would you? You'd be like,
yeah.
To be like, I would actually. I'd be like, that's fucking great banter. I'm having that.
That, yeah. Yeah, that is good banter.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Obviously, you said that you got into a relationship for 2 years after that wasn't a good one at all. How did your dad's death change your relationship with yourself and your inner dialogue, the way you spoke to yourself?
Do you know what? I felt like I was a superhero after. So literally, I remember when my dad was in the hospice, I remember thinking, I've got some friends that have lost their parents, and I was looking at them like, is this how you've been like walking around life? Like, you've just been out here living with this pain. Like, you are a champ. So do you know what? I kind of thought, I didn't feel like I was better than anyone, but I felt like I could handle myself a lot better than a lot of people. There wasn't much that I couldn't overcome. And it almost gave me a sense of like, I dare you. Like, apart from the relationship, which I was like, love me.
We've been there.
Apart from that one. Yeah. I would literally, I started this job, which is still to this day my favourite job. Like, I actually loved it. But I threw myself into it. I would work hours. Like, my normal day would be like 8 till 4. I would get in the office at 6 in the morning and I'd leave at 9 o'clock at night. Mm. And for no extra pay, I just loved it. And by doing it, and like, so I used to arrange repairs for people's houses and just helping people. It made me feel better. And I also took absolutely no SHIT in the office. Like, I remember there was this guy, and he was like fresh out of uni, and he'd like come in as like a manager, and he would like try and tell me what to do in that, and I just used to absolutely roast him on the coals. It gives you a level of superiority because you just know, that there are adults out there that they just don't know. Like, don't get me wrong. So it's like you said, like, in my house, there was me, my mum and my brother. We all was obviously grieving the same person, but we was grieving completely different relationships. Mm. I can't even fathom my mum losing her husband. Like, that is insane. Touch wood, please God, I don't
please God to
deal with that. Yeah, but my mum also didn't understand that she had her dad up until he was in his 70s. She had her dad at her wedding. Like, she had her dad meet her kids. You're grieving your future as well as you're grieving massively what you've lost.
Yeah, you literally grieve so much, don't you? And that's what people don't tell you either before it happens to you. Like, you know, it's not just the fact that you're losing this person, but you're losing this future that you're not going to have together either. And it's brutal.
Yeah, you're deprived of so much. Mm. So much.
Oh, so much. It, like, I always say now, without sounding too pessimistic, like, my life will never truly be as good as it could be because of every single milestone in my life.
Yep. It's tinged with sadness.
That person might Completely. Yeah. Like, even, it's not matter how many people say, oh, your dad would be so proud. I know my dad's proud, but I want to hear him say it.
Exactly.
So every single thing in my life will never truly be as amazing as it was supposed to be, I like to say.
So annoying, that, isn't it? So frustrating.
Yeah. It's so rude.
It's so rude. The audacity, to be honest.
Honestly, me and God fell out for a good year and a half, let me tell you. We're only just on talking about it now.
So obviously a lot of people are going to know who you are because of Love Island, and I've been, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think, you never spoke about it on there, did you? Or wasn't aired you spoke about it?
It wasn't aired.
I was wondering, because you couldn't have gone that long without mentioning, like, by the way, my dad's dead.
Oh my God, I was like, hi, my name's Sean and my dad died 2 years ago.
That's what I literally did. I was really interested to know, like, whether you spoke about it quite candidly on there with them or not.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think they aired it once. I think they aired it, like, kind of near my end in there. I get it now. When I was in there, oh my God, everyone felt the wrath of me. But I get it now, looking back, that it's a dating show. It's lighthearted fun. They don't really want to hear me giving the nation like a one-to-one tour on how to like get through grief. I get it. But
still annoying.
In the villa, it's still very annoying. Let me get my sob card out. I've worked hard for this. But there's like hidden tannoys all throughout the villa. And like when you're doing something you shouldn't be doing or whatever, the producers talk to you through the tannoy. So, I mean, it looked like school. Yeah. Like they would say, like, don't talk about that. Sean would get away from there and this, that and the other. And I think it was me and like most of the girls were sitting in the kitchen area and we was just chilling. Like if you're not having a proper chat, you're kind of just chilling with your mates. And I remember Jess, the twin, like we were really close. And she said to me, oh, Shawnee, can you tell us a little bit about your dad? Aww. And I was like, well, allow me. Did you want to talk about my dad? Yeah. And so we was talking about it there. And literally through a tannoy directly behind us, the producer went, Shawnee, Jess, enough of that chat now, please. And I literally was like, you fucking what? And I took my mic off. Mm. I took my mic off and I was like, meet me outside the house now. Because that was where the smoking area was.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to take that off. So I knew by taking it off, I'd garner some kind of like
take my
response.
Earrings out.
Oh, literally. I was like, you meet me downstairs now because I am going to fucking annihilate you. And yeah, I went down there. I had murders. They was like, we're so sorry. We didn't mean it. I was like, listen, I am your fucking age. Don't ever talk to me like that again. Let me have the conversation. Take me to the beach hut. Tell me to not like talk about it again in a polite way. Do not say it in front of the whole villa, because then the whole villa goes, oh, what was I talking about? Mm. Was I talking about how many followers they've got on Instagram?
Oh, great.
Like, no. Like,
You can't go that long without talking about your parents.
And it isn't, it doesn't matter what show you're on, Shauna, it's nobody else's place to tell you, you need to stop talking about your dead dad.
Mm. Yeah.
And actually, what that could have done is when you think about the audience watching that show, it could have helped a lot of people if they'd have listened and broadcast it. Because we aren't the only three people in the country who've got a dead parent. And so you could have really, really helped people. And I admire you so much for taking your mic back off and going and saying, no, because do you know what? Why should you be told? No one can tell you to not talk. Yeah. I would feel like I'd be seething.
It was almost just like, all right, shut up now. Like, enough of that conversation now, please, girls. And I was just like, listen, don't ever. Talk to me like that.
Especially like
and
that.
And I mean, they apologised. I'm wrong. They apologised. And like, I get it. But yeah, there was a time and a place. Don't speak to me. Like, they do, like you said, like a wisdom beyond your years. They do treat you a lot like you they're the adult and you're the child.
Yeah.
Whereas I was the oldest in the villa. I was 25. I was the oldest
That's
in there.
That's crazy, isn't it? So, 25 and you're the oldest. Honestly,
yeah, I was like, guys, can we tidy up now, please? Can we have tidy up time? but I felt it. I felt it as well. because there was things going on when I was just like,
it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Someone kill me now. Yeah. Yeah,
I bet.
did you think about your dad a lot in there? And did you think,
what would he think?
Well, yeah,
what
because
would he say?
You have your integrity. You're very true to yourself. Yeah. And I wonder if, you know, you said you were really close and you thank your dad a lot for who you are. So I wonder if, because you're put in situations that are, you know, somewhat artificial, because who else gets put in a villa where it's like, talk to these people, go and do this, go and do that. If there was a quiet voice in your head or you had moments to think of him.
Oh, 100%. You know what? It is almost a blessing in disguise. It really did make me realise then that it is truly just the physical part that leaves the earth. Mm. Because I used to go to the smoking area. Is the only time that you can truly, you're on your own, because you're not allowed to go out with other people and like be in that area and like with other people having chats, whatever. You're only allowed out there on your own. And I would go out there maybe 2 or 3 times a day, and I would take my sweet time because it was my only time where I could just kind of be at one with myself. And I would talk to my dad and my mum in my head all the time. And it made me realise I'm talking to my mum as much as I'm talking to my dad. And you can hear the response. Like, you know, you've been around these people. You're part of these people. That's what you are. You know what they're going to say back. You're having these conversations. And I could hear them both. So it did make me realise that I'm as connected to my mum, who is still here, as I am with my dad, who isn't anymore. And it's so weird that I would literally want to leave every day, only because I am just dramatic. Like, when I look back, there was nothing to leave over. Like, it was a fun
that
experience.
That is your life, though, when you're there, isn't it? Like, you can't really...
That's what I mean. Well, when you think back to school, every day you'd kick off and, my God, you hate me. It was never that bad. So I would literally, I'd go out into the smoking area and I'd be like, oh, my God, I'd want to leave. And I would hear my mum and dad in my head going, don't you dare. You've been given this opportunity. You go back in there and you stop being a drama queen. And I'd be like, oh... fine. And then I remember the night that I did leave, I went out into the smoking area and I was like, I'm really okay with leaving now. I'm really okay. And I saw a white butterfly go past me. Aww. And it was the only time that I felt like that I felt a sense of complete calm. And there was no voices in my head going, no, don't leave. I felt completely okay to leave at that point. And then it happened. And I just think it happened in the right way. Like, there's not a single regret. There was one time, though, that I often, not lately, actually, but I used to very frequently wake up crying. And, like, I'd say maybe 2 or 3 times a week, I'd wake up and I'd be crying. And it happened in the villa. And I was so embarrassed. It happened at like 5 o'clock in the morning. I woke up and I was crying. And normally, obviously, I'm just like, oh, here we go. And then I'd go back to sleep. But because I was so nervous of anyone else finding out that I was crying, I think I had a dream about my dad, like, seeing me in the villa or something like that. And I couldn't contain my sobs. So then I quickly ran to the toilet. I forgot my mic, ran to the toilet. And I was like sobbing in the bathroom. And I was like, pull yourself together. Like, come on. And on the tannoy, because you're being watched 24/7. And even when we're asleep, there's a producer in the gallery watching us. And over the tannoy, I heard, psst, are you okay?
Aww.
And I was like, no. And she was like, meet me upstairs. So then I went upstairs and I was up there for like 2 hours with her just talking. We watched the sunset come up. We had a cup of tea and it was just so nice. And no one else knows about that. None of the other like housemates know about that. I don't know whether he was there. My mum always says, when people say to her, like, what would Eddie make of Shauna being in Love Island? Mm-hmm. Went, well, she wouldn't be in there if he was still here.
How lovely that you had that moment with that producer. Really. I love that.
You needed that there at that moment as well, I bet.
But even that, there is an element of you go, I wonder if, like, partly that is your dad, that because, you know, knowing you yeah. need this help, mm-hmm. you need someone to just sit with you for that
I'm a
time.
True believer yeah. that they make things happen, you yeah. know, that they yeah. make that they make good things happen when you need it the most, definitely.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And do you know what's so weird as well? When I first saw Callum, who I was coupled up with in there, I thought, God, there's a picture. Obviously, I didn't tell anyone in here because how weird was that? But there was a picture that I could think of my dad where he looked like Callum when he was younger. Way. Like my dad had tight, curly hair. Yeah. And then it was only when I'd come out that my family went, God, don't you think you look like your dad? And I was like, yeah. And then, there was a picture, I think, my friends, while I was in there, it was World Cancer Day, and they put up a picture of me and my dad when I was, like, little. And all of the comments underneath it was, oh, my God, her dad looks like Callum.
Oh, that's so...
How mad's that?
So,
that is mad.
So mad. So mad.
Do you... You know, off the back of Love Island, you will have been, and still are, targeted by people to ask you to do certain things or to like be this. In certain things. Yeah, like us, basically. Do you feel like because of the lessons that your dad instilled into you, it's given you that sense of integrity and an idea of what is right for you and wrong for you? Because I follow you on social media and you always seem to just do things right, if that makes sense. It's like,
thank you.
It's like you know what's right for you.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I studied journalism at university.
Yeah.
And it was only when my dad got ill. And there were so many things just with the NHS, like just with his treatment and just so many things that were wrong that I thought, I don't want to write about these things. I want to try and do something about these things because they are horrific. And I think that's what started when I was working in repairs. I used to work for a housing, it was at my local council, Lambeth Council. So I would constantly be trying to help people who would be going through similar situations, and they would tell me about it. And then I'd be like, have no fear, I'll have a plumber with you in half an hour. Because I just know those little things will just make the biggest of differences. Yeah. So it's definitely now, like, I've worked with Macmillan, Pancreatic Cancer UK, and, like, I always say to management, like, don't even ask me if I'm available, just book me for it, because I owe it to them. Like, it's kind of not necessarily my purpose, but I need to pay it forward. Like, Macmillan helped my family with grants when we was literally going to be evicted from our house. Like, imagine if I was like, yeah, I'll do it, but only for this fee or that fee. Like absolutely not. Like, if I could do anything to help these charities, oh my God, like, I'd do it all day, every day. And just even, like you said, I get tagged in loads of, like, GoFundMe pages and stuff like that, and it's hard to look at and it's heavy.
Yeah,
I don't like to necessarily pick and choose, but there is definitely some people that would just never ever get the coverage or the platform that others would.
Yeah,
like, you see certain names all the time, and then there's others that you never see. Like, there was a boy who he passed away, and I remember. I think I come across his GoFundMe page maybe in, like, the March, and I saw it, and his GoFundMe page had been active since, like, the December. He was only, like, I think he might have been 4 or 5, and I still talk to his family now. This was in 2020, and I remember we raised all of the money that he needed within maybe 72 hours.
Wow.
And don't get me wrong, that's absolutely amazing. That's the first time I thought, you know what, I can sleep well tonight. Like, I've done this for him. And he passed away about 3 or 4 weeks later. And I still speak to his family, I speak to his aunt. And I had this, not guilt, but I thought, bloody hell, that page has been there since December. Mm-hmm. And we managed to get it. But you can't. And I didn't have the platform in December.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't anyone then, so there wasn't anything I could have done, but I just thought, you know what, how bitter is that they got the money and then it just weren't enough. But when I spoke to his aunt, she said to me, she messaged me saying, did you know that we reached out to so many people and they, like, influencers, and they said it just doesn't agree with, like, their page's aesthetic. And I thought, do you know what? It will hit them one day. Unfortunately, not karma, but God has a way of humbling you.
Yeah.
And you will be shown in a way when, like, I know, if I just pray, like, if my dad was ever, if a monetary value was ever put on my dad's, like, survival, I'd just pray that there would have been someone out there. Yeah. So I just try and do it like that. I don't like to pick and choose, but there are certain people that just never get the coverage that others do. So I try to help them if I can.
Were there ever times when the coverage that you got for being you and for going on Love Island and the things that you did afterwards, was there ever a time when that coverage got almost overwhelming for you and you wanted your dad?
Do you know what? I don't actually know how my dad would have coped. My dad was very protective. I don't know how he would have handled it.
It's a lot of limelight very quickly, isn't it? Like,
yeah, like my mum used to get messages while I was in Love Island, would get messages and be like, from journalists, like, we're in the cafe at the top of the road if you want to come
That's crazy.
And, yeah, and I don't think my dad would have coped that very well. I don't think he would have liked to have seen. I'm very good at not looking at, like, nasty comments. Like, I'm so okay with just not even knowing about them. But if my dad had ever seen it, I just think that would have sent him a bit loopy, because he would want to kill everyone that said anything bad about me, or he'd probably take it out on me, like, why did you have to do that? But yeah, I can't. This isn't a normal situation to be in, like, going on Love Island. That's not normal. But I just can't imagine how my dad would have dealt with it. I'd love to know what he thought about it all. I need to go and see a psychic soon.
obviously, you've been on the Full Monty as well, haven't you? And I think, was it before that you did a YouTube video where you kind of dedicated it basically to your dad and your story with your dad?
Oh my God, that was the most horrendous YouTube.
Well, it wasn't there, because, like, what was the reaction like from that? Because it must have been, I bet you must have had so many people messaging you after that.
I just think it's probably my dark humour, but the audacity of me to do how to deal with grief YouTube, and then throughout that video, I progressively break down more and more and more and prove that I don't know how to deal with grief.
None of us do. It's the truth, though, isn't it? It's fine.
No. Do you know what? If you look at the views on my YouTubes, that didn't get that many. Mm. And I think it's just because it's a place that
no one wants to go there.
It's all good to be like, oh, that must be so bad. But to actually hear someone describe it in detail, it's not really something. So I think the people that watched it would probably have been the people that have gone through it. But other than that, and don't get me wrong, if you don't know the grief, I'm bloody jealous. Like, I don't want you to know the grief. Like, that is so good that you don't. But we're all going to experience it one day. So it's best to get clued up.
Yeah. It's like this podcast is about it. This podcast is about, it's, you know, people that haven't got a dead parent aren't as likely to listen to it. Every now and again, I get messages from people that are friends, listen to it for a bit of advice.
Partners,
but it's only the people that have got a dead parent and have experienced that actually get value from it. But helping that those small amounts of people is huge, because before they never got anything. So it makes a difference.
Completely. I remember the day, I don't think it was the exact same day. No, it's maybe 3 or 4 days difference. But when I was in the hospice, I remember just being on my phone and Louis Tomlinson, who was in One Direction, his mum had just passed away. And I remember I think it was leukemia. And I remember reading it thinking, oh my God, I don't feel so alone anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, it isn't just, because you do feel like it is just you who's going through this at this very moment. So to know that, oh my God, there's someone that's kind of feeling the exact feelings that I'm feeling right now, even though me and Louis ain't mates, breaking news, we're not mates. But it did feel nice to not feel so alone.
Mm. How do you feel now, Shauna? Like, when you look back to that 20-year-old Shauna who was having sleepless nights thinking, oh my God, I can't tell my mum, like, I'm not allowed to tell my mum. Do you feel that you've progressed or grown in any way since then, in terms of, I mean, naturally you do anyway, as you get older, don't you?
Yeah.
But how do you feel now about the loss of your dad? It's still raw, but compared to then.
Of course, it's definitely still raw. It's not, it doesn't dim. It just kind of, you adjust, you get stronger, but it's still completely like overbearing. So much has changed in my life that it's just, I can't imagine the old me. It's so weird. And I was so vulnerable back then. But don't get me wrong, I wish every single day that my dad was still here, but it's completely changed who I am. I feel like it changed my career path. I mean, like, thanks for the debt of university, but yeah, it completely changed the fact that I didn't want to be a journalist anymore. I wanted to do something that could help just one family, would make me feel better. I think it's made me, like, I'm an Aries anyway, so I'm probably an empath as it is. But I am, like, I feel like I feel everyone's grief.
Yeah.
Like, anyone that comes near me, I'm like, do you want to cry with me? I feel everything a lot deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I know the pain of losing someone, although it might be different circumstances. Like, I know the pain, and it's like a club that no one wants to be in. We'll all be in it eventually, but when you're in it, you do just kind of, you put this armor on that is like, it's made of glass.
Yeah.
Because I will shatter at any moment, but you put it on every day, and you become the best at giving advice, even though you do feel like you are so not coping. You do become the best. Like, I had a friend who went through, her house got robbed for, I can't remember, when was this? Maybe like 2019. There was a break-in in her home. And I remember saying to her, I promise you, there is more to life than your possessions that you've lost. And I get that it doesn't make it any better. And I get that. And you are so entitled to feel the way you feel. But I just promise you that, like, everything that you've lost can be replaced. And do you know what? It's changed my, not that I had an outlook on money back then because I had no money, but there is no like monetary value that once I hit, I'd be like, oh my God, everything's amazing, because it doesn't exist. Like, I remember the day my dad died thinking, God, I could be a billionaire right now and it will not change the way I feel. It will not make anything better. And I think having that realization definitely does take the pressure off of chasing a pound note, because honestly, like, there are some things that I've read before and I'm like, wow, when certain people get wake-up calls, it's going to wake them up a lot.
Like a ton of bricks.
You are so right, Shauna. And I think that's one of the biggest things that you and I have discussed, Kat, is you realise very quickly, and not, I was never a materialistic person anyway, like, and I know you weren't, and I know you're not, Kat, but you realise that literally nothing matters. Like, today, for example, yeah, like, it was my mum that died, and today I went for a coffee with my dad. We had an hour and 15 minutes together, and I loved that. It was an hour and 15 minutes just of me and my dad, and I was like, one day this is a memory, you know, and this is something I can't do with my mum, and I would have loved to have done with that, and that's what matters. You're exactly right, you know, it cost us £6.50 for two coffees and a table water, but that's more important than anything in the world, because you can't get that time with those people back. And I think the three of us learnt that hard lesson very young, and it just changes. And I don't know about you, because you had Emma, which was brilliant that you had Emma to talk to, but it is difficult sometimes to relate to your friends, because they do still have those things, which we all do at a young age, things matter more than they do as you get older. But I do think you almost find yourself being a little more lonely, going, this shit really doesn't actually matter that much. Like, there's real problems in the world.
No, completely. Completely. And I am the world's worst influencer, because I'm the worst. If I go to an event or something like that, I never have my phone out, because I just want to see everything and actually experience it, rather than what might make my Instagram look so
much
better.
Living behind a screen.
Like, literally. Yeah. And I'll go home and I'll like see people's Instagrams and I'm like, that looks so amazing. Why can't I do that? But I just don't. My phone's in my bag and I'm talking to people because I want to ask you how your day is, and I want to know what do you do, like, rather than just sitting there taking pictures of everything. I'd rather live in the moment. And even though there are, I'm absolutely in no way materialistic, I do struggle with the fact that I'm like, my dad used to like obviously buy my mum presents and this, that and the other. So I now do that and I love doing it, but I know it's never going to fix anything for my mum. Like, me buying her presents or taking her on holidays, I love being able to do that and it makes me feel better. But I definitely feel like I try and overcompensate. Like, oh, are you better now? Are you okay? Like, have this, have that.
Yeah.
When I know it won't. But I also know, I take great comfort in knowing that my dad's probably up there going, right, good girl.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. You're looking after your mum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And I definitely, like, I love doing that. Like, that's, I can't do it enough.
So one of the things we love to do is ask our guests to kind of bring their parent to life for the end of the podcast. So basically, please tell us again, you know, your dad's name and your favourite memory of him.
Yeah, okay. So my dad is Eddie. That's another thing I always do. I don't say was. I don't talk about him in past tense because I'm like, well, I still have a dad.
Yeah, like, he still is Eddie.
Yeah. And like sometimes, oh my God, this is what I do. I'll talk about him in present tense, obviously. And then the poor person's talking to me. Oh, no. He's still alive. And then I have to pretend that he's still alive. And I'm sitting there saying, oh, he does this, he does that. Like, honestly, it's so embarrassing. I've just got to go with it. Because then I don't have the heart to be like, he's dead.
Oh, sorry, he's actually dead. I just talked about him in present tense.
Yeah. So honestly, like other people, I've had my manager, Ella, looking at me going, I'm like, yeah. Last night we were chatting, like,
oh, no.
so embarrassing.
Oh, I think, yeah. I love you a little bit more, yeah, for that. That is amazing.
Honestly,
amazing.
It's so bad. I don't want to have to go through that. Yeah. Oh, he's dead. Mm. No way. I'm so sorry. It's fine. It's dead. Who?
But yeah, what is a lasting memory aside from Arsenal doing the double of your of Eddie? What do you remember that you go, oh, that's my dad?
Oh my God, I'll tell you what. So him and my nan is my mum's mum. She used to come round and stay with us every weekend, like from a Friday to a Monday. And she is the typical, I don't know if you remember, you know, Catherine Tate show.
Yes.
She was the nan in that. Like, she was, that was her. That was just her completely. And to the point where all of the little, like, great grandkids in my family would call her Nanny Tate.
I love it.
And like, she would always not necessarily pretend that she was ill, don't get me wrong. She had COPD and everything. But she would maybe over dramatize it to like get people to get stuff for her and this, that, and the other. It used to wind my dad up. So whenever my nan would come down, she would sit on the sofa. She'd have every single like TV remote. My dad couldn't watch anything on telly because my nan would have all the remotes. So, and she pretended that she had like a really bad ankle. So he had to keep getting up and making her a tea and that. So what he done, you know, like the automatic air fresheners.
Yeah.
It had run out. So it would still automatically go off, but nothing would come out and it would make like a hissing sound.
Yeah.
And my dad put it behind where she was sitting and it would go off all like every now and then. And she'd go, what is that? And my dad went, God, I don't know. I don't know what that is. And after about the second day, he went, Joan, there's a snake under your legs.
Sure.
And she ran across the front. Yeah, she ran across the front room quicker than Usain Bolt. I'm not even joking. She actually broke like the sound barrier getting across the front room. And my dad was like, see, I told you she weren't ill.
That is such a long game, that. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, it was a waiting game. He also shot her in the mouth with a Nerf gun as well at one point. And she caught it with her fake teeth. Oh, it was so funny. And
that's brilliant.
Then they got into, because she would always say, oh, I'm so not well at the minute. When he did get ill, he went, I told you that, leave all of us. And, yeah, it was almost like battle of the illness at that point.
Shauna.
So, the sense of humour.
Yeah,
based on that, I've built up an image of this incredible man in my head and it just sounds like the world is a little less bright without Eddie in it. That's what it sounds like.
It really is. Can I just say, there was a time when he would always, like, if we would ask him to do the washing machine or something, he'd be like, go on, make the terminally ill one do it. And, like, me and my mum would always tell him off like, for saying that. Like, don't say the T word, like, at all. And then there was, I was trying to make him feel better one day, and he was like, Dan, and I was like, come on, sickly Sarah. And he stopped talking to me for 3 days. 3 days he stopped talking to me. And I was just like, oh my God, I thought that was banter.
I thought it was banter.
Do you know what? It's so clear based on what you've said, the legacy that he's left lives on in you.
Oh my God, massively.
Like, you can really, the resemblance from what you've said. And Shauna, I just want to tell you, because I know me and Kat were really looking forward to chatting to you. You are such a pure soul.
10 like, out of 10, girl.
You really are. And I cannot tell you how much this will help so many people. Yeah. And everything that you do, you know, I've learned things about you today that I realise will, and it's made me even look at myself and go, I could do more with this life for other people, actually. And I hope that whatever you go on to continue to do in your life, that you are happy. And I can't speak for your dad, but I can tell you, anyone would be really proud to have you as a daughter.
Oh my God, 100%.
Anyone.
Oh, thank you so much.
Said
that's
words.
So kind of you.
It's the truth though, isn't
you
it?
Are.
That, you know, I'm looking at you, I'm like, if I had a girl and she grew up to be like you, I'd be like, yes,
well, I
my
knew
girl.
It. Honestly, when I saw her on Love Island, I was like, this girl's got something about her. I just bloody knew it.
It's true, much.
It is.
You know Jake from him?
Yes.
He said the same thing. He was like, you know what? The best people are always made when they've been through trauma.
It's true.
Like, yeah, it's
true. Me and Jake, actually, we did an event recently and it was interesting. We worked together. We were there. We had to stay over for a few nights and there was like a bunch of us and me and Jake were just like drawn to each other. I was like, yeah, dead parents. That's what it is.
Do you know what though? That's what the whole Real Full Monty experience was like. It's like, you was walking into this like therapy group. Oh my God. And like talking of like the dark humour, like we'd always be like, Jake would like talk about his brother and then he'd be like, and then there was my dad. And we'd be like, oh, listen, we get it.
Top
okay.
Every time.
You trump all of us. We get it. Oh, it was so fun. So fun. You make friends for life.
You do.
Through trauma.
You really do. Shauna, thank you so much for joining us on the Dead Parent Club podcast. You've been an absolute joy. Stella, thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.